My introduction to cowboy music and imagery was the same as everybody else's. My father was a big fan of cowboy movies, and I'm half black and half Mexican, so growing up in Arizona, there are a lot of different things that you see, especially on the side with Mexicans, because Arizona is right there at the front of the U.S. border and stuff like that, and then in the African American community, it's kind of an interesting sort of melting pot of the black community in of itself, because through the Western migration, you have people from a lot of times it's like Louisiana, eastern parts of Texas, as well as parts of Arkansas specifically, and then you have other pieces of it, but a lot of folks from those particular parts of the South, which is sort of the western part of the southern states, they tended to move out from Las Vegas and Colorado, and also all the way out to Los Angeles, and Arizona is a stop along the way, as well as New Mexico. And so, growing up, I knew this. I didn't think much about it, but it was maybe about 10 years ago. I was actually going to visit family. Since I had lived in North Carolina a long time, I was traveling across the highway going back to Arizona, and I happened to come across a book called The Negro Cowboys, which is a book that talks about how one in four cowboys who helped settle the West were African American. And having not spent a lot of time hearing that particular narrative, even though I knew there was an African American community out West, just by growing up in it, I thought that I needed to do a little bit more investigating. And so that's where I started finding a lot of stories of very amazing individuals, as well as amazing history of the West as well. Not necessarily all good, but definitely tells you a lot about the formation of the country and also the different ways that people took the American ideal and tried to use that as they came across new plots of land that they built on, and a variety of stories emerged from that over a long period of time.
So the music that we came to know you initially as an artist through the Chocolate Drops and is so associated with the Southeast and with Piedmont, part of the Eastern Seaboard. Does this represent? Would you dissuade people from thinking that this represented a big shift of gears or departure in your focus and your have you been sort of thinking about this for a long, long time, or does the field of what you've wanted to do through the last decade and what you're doing right now is not all that different, just a bit of a regional shift of point of view?
Well, I think in certain regards, the focus is the same in the way that I want to tell the story of American musical traditions that aren't as well known. The thing that is unique about the Black Cowboy story is that, one, the history is very unique. It tells a lot of the time frame between the Reconstruction era leading into the First World War era, and then it also tells another story as you go into the post-World War II era, when you have a lot of people that were veterans, like my grandfather, who came from Texas, was a veteran, then he went to Los Angeles because he was stationed there, and then he decided to settle into Flagstaff because he worked at a sawmill. And so he was a preacher and a sawmill worker. So the post-war story tells you another version, and then you take it back farther to the 1860s and 1870s. So the years leading up to the Civil War and the years after the Civil War, you find that the working class culture and cowboy work in particular, because again, you're thinking about people that are emancipated from slavery, they've been working on the ranch, working with cows and horses for quite a long time and generations sometimes. So they're applying that skill into their Western movement. So starting a new life, but they're also ranching and farming. And if when also there were other people that were moving out west that was started farms. African-American itinerant workers were also working all the way through all the trails until the birth of the railroad. And that's when you have many becoming Pullman porters on the railroad line. And that leads into its own history of the West. So that's the ideological standpoint. But musically, what I wanted to do was, there are several really amazing stories of black cowboys that are linked to people like John A. Lomax and Alan Lomax, as well as Jack Thorpe, the cowboy singer who he did a book on cowboy songs that preceded the Lomaxes by a few years. But both of them were inspired by black cowboys, with some of the documentation of their songs that they took down from their field recordings. And so a combination of that with the East Texas blues songsters like Lightning Hopkins and Mance Lipscomb, Henry Thomas, and Leadbelly, taking some of those parts of the narrative of blues, and for string band music, because I feature a string band number from the Tennessee Chocolate Drops, which featured Howard Armstrong. And so I kind of made a Tex-Mex version of that in there. And so I decided I wanted to just introduce African-American folk songs in the context of cowboy song, because they're all in the same type of umbrella, especially when you start reading the source material that some of the people that collected it and some of the cowboys that wrote about it discuss. And so I just wanted to bring that out as an introduction to the subject, because it's such a multifaceted and such an amazing part of American history, not just African American, but general American history, because you learn a lot about how the West was formed, and then how the West was won when they performed it on the stage afterward, which is part of the reason why the imagery is completely changed over. But it's just adding on to that big narrative, and being able to work with the National Museum of African American History and Culture in partnership with Smithsonian Folkways, that was also something that was a dream come true, because I was interested in getting this black cowboy story out there in general. But to be able to work with these very prestigious institutions, and then also the museum, they didn't have a whole bunch of stuff on cowboys, so this album now is something that's in their gift shop, and they can have that to tell a little bit of those stories of black cowboys.
As the album concept began to gel in your mind, at what point did the relationship with Smithsonian Folkways come into focus and probably turn what was a personal fascination into an actual kind of research assignment, where you then went at it with an extra degree of intensity? Would that be a fair way to describe it? Kind of how did it come together?
Oh, absolutely. Well, at first I had the idea, and as I mentioned before, for about 10 years I've casually grabbed information about black cowboys, because I thought in of itself that was a story I wanted to know before my personal. Then, of course, later on, just being a fan of cowboy music in general, you know, I've always been a fan of Marty Robbins, and always loved The Riders in the Sky and The Redheaded Stranger by Willie Nelson. My dad loved country music growing up, and you know, like Charlie Daniels was one of his favorite artists. And so I pitched the idea to Folkways. They were into it. And so from there, it turned into a project where then I wanted to make historical photos a big part of the liner notes. And at first I grabbed a bunch of historical photos. I then also grabbed a friend of mine, Timothy Duffy, who I've worked with for years. He started a nonprofit called Music Maker Relief Foundation. And in our time of knowing each other, Tim really got into wet plate collodion photography from the early 1920s. And so I grabbed Tim and I said, "Hey, Tim, let's do a cowboy session where we recreate a couple of old-timey photos." Because it's like a regular camera, but when you take pictures with it, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, Matthew Brady, like, or Ken Burns, the Civil War documentary, that it instantly transports you there. And you could even be in a jeans and a t-shirt and it transports you there. You are a historical document, like the imagery that we always have seen of the history. And so that technology is fascinating in of itself. So we did a couple of tintypes to supplement, to have historical as well as current tintypes to show a little of that flavor. Also, one of the black cowboys that that wrote his own autobiography, Nat Love. He has such an amazing story, transitioning from being in slavery, then emancipation, then he becomes a cowboy, and then he becomes a Pullman porter, and then he writes his own autobiography in his lifetime. And to see a picture of this guy with both his cowboy gear and a second picture later in his life when he was a Pullman porter, it is a fascinating view of Western culture, especially as the Industrial Revolution came in. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of historical backdrop that makes this story even more fascinating. But again, I wanted to do an introduction to black cowboys as a subject. So I have the blues songsters. I also have the songs like Goodbye Old Paint and Home on the Range, which are songs that were collected by John A. Lomax, and they both have stories connected to black cowboys in one form or another. Home on the Range was collected by a cook in San Antonio that John Lomax met, and he transcribed that cylinder recording, which, by the way, was made of wax, and I call it the Library of Congress, and they said it's dust currently because it fell apart. But because right. Lomax transcribed it, it is the version that is our national Western anthem.
Home on the Range was really striking as you recorded it. There's actually a verse in there about Native American removal, which really stuck out. And so you're saying that was part of the original song.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that's even interesting about a song like Home on the Range, is that the songs have references to topical subjects of the day. Like, most people don't do the Native American verse of "the red man was pressed from this heart of the part of the West. He's likely no more to return from the banks of Red River, and seldom, if ever, their flickering campfires burn." Because it's an interesting verse, it being controversial, because it mentions the removal, but at the same time, it mentions the nostalgia of wishing that they were still there after they have been removed. So the song really tells a very multifaceted emotion and feeling, which is, again, what good songs are supposed to do. And I wanted to make sure to feature all the original verses. And then I also went off of a recording of one of the first singing cowboys, Jules Verne Allen, and I used his version of Home on the Range to sing it.
The language is often very powerful, very poetic, very evocative, and speaks to a culture of people that were trying to, I think, use the language as richly and sort of push it. And you attended the National Cowboy Poetry Gathering, and I'd love to hear you about your experience.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you, I did 3 years this year at Elko in a row. So 15, 16, and 17, you know, I had put together a lot of information on my own. And having not grown up in cowboy culture, like as a rancher, I wanted to make sure that whatever I presented out there was going to be authentic for people that know the cowboy music. And then as someone, again, as an African-American person, there's a reason that there's a certain amount of urbanization in my background, because my great-grandfather, he got his 40 acres and a mule in Texas, and then now as his great-great-grandson, there was a transition that went over from leaving the farm, becoming a part of the city, then leaving the small city and going to the bigger city, which is why I grew up in Phoenix in the metropolitan area. So through just a few generations, you know, I can link back to the earlier times when you have the, you know, emancipation and then the changes that came with all that. And when I went to Elko, it was nice to be able to talk with a lot of different cowboy performers. I met a wonderful fellow named Sourdough Slim, who's an amazing old-time cowboy performer, like in the classic sense of it. And that was great. The Riders in the Sky, of course, have been an inspiration. Another fellow, Andy Hedges. But it wasn't until I met a fellow named Don Edwards, and he just really blew my mind. Don Edwards also was telling me about how black cowboys, the old guys he met in his day, the black cowboys called themselves black vaqueros. And he wanted to make a point of saying black vaqueros, vaqueros negros, it was one of the keys to the black cowboy story. So for me, I knew what a vaquero was as a Mexican cowboy, but to know that the Mexican cowboy was so essential to the entire birthing of the Western culture, because of course they were the working class ranchers that got the work done. And so to understand that African American and Mexican American culture coalesced together along with white culture and all the other cultures of the West with Mexican culture, and then of course, you know, there's a deep history of Mexico. They were their own nation, then they were part of the Spanish Empire, so it's a whole elaborate other history that we're seeing combined with the European history, and then with black cowboys, the African American history mixing together. Oh, it's fascinating. So Don Edwards really got me hip to that. And then also he got me hip to the song Little Joe the Wrangler, a song I had heard before, but when I heard Don Edwards perform it, I was reminded of the power and beauty of that ballad. And that was the song written by Jack Thorpe. And he wrote the song and he put it in his book Songs of the Cowboy in 1908. And that was 2 years before Lomax published his own cowboy song book. John A. Lomax was a folklorist, which is a difference, but Jack Thorpe was an enthusiast. He was a guy from upstate New York who went to New Mexico to become a cowboy. And so when he did that, he went to Addison Jones, who was one of the most prominent African-American foremen at that time, and he got a job with him. And so Jack Thorpe, the first day he comes in, he writes about in his autobiography that he comes in and he's drawn into the sound of a bunch of black cowboys playing banjo around the campfire. And they were singing a song about their cutting horses. And there was a song called Dodgin' Joe that they were singing. And Thorpe is very clear that he hears something in the way they're singing this song that he has to try to document, because he said that they sang other songs, which he says they were just a bunch of cotton patch songs. And he said, if you want cotton patch songs, that's one thing, but these cowboy songs were a whole other thing that he saw. And he described it in a way saying that it's kind of like a response to the blues and the loneliness of being a cowboy out on the range. And for me, when I hear that, that's kind of sounds like someone just talking about being blue and having the blues. And so for me, cowboy music is kind of an early form of the blues, before it's the blues as we know it. But it links into what would emerge later as blues singing. And Don Edwards, he and I had a big conversation about that. So anyway, that was one thing that happened at Elko, beside it being an amazing event and an amazing representation of traditional cowboy music and culture as connected through folklorists and ranchers, which is what Elko was all about. So I went 3 years and I was on a scholarship the first year, which was really great. And to be able to be a part of that was truly fascinating. And also I got a great poem out of it too. Andy Hedges read a poem called Old Proc. And to me, Old Proc was really what brought the whole album together. Because once he recited Old Proc, it really told you a lot about the way that ideologically, if people couldn't get together, when they worked together on the range, you found a whole different perspective and a different story that came out of that.
You probably get a lot of questions about the story of Bass Reeves, the song He's a Lone Ranger. Remarkable. And that's one of your originals, correct?
That's correct. There were a couple of stories that I could find the histories, and these different people in the West, they were such colorful characters, because, you know, when we're talking about the Wild West, you know, and they say that the West was won or tamed, people don't realize that was a literal thing, especially by the 1860s and 70s. A lot of stuff was going on, and when it came to people of color, there was a lot going on, so there was a lot of there were a lot of lawmen that had to really jump in there and do some unconventional work. And Bass Reeves was one of them. He was the first deputy U.S. Marshal of the United States that was African American. And the first thing I heard about him was that he was the Lone Ranger. So most everybody's heard of the Lone Ranger. If you like any sort of Western stuff, you have heard Hi-Ho Silver, you've seen some version of the Lone Ranger. And of course, then there was a movie, a remake recently, that also, you know, the image keeps repeating itself, and it's been like that since the radio days.
Yeah, and an American archetype, yeah. after all, yeah.
And even the dime store novels, that's a thing too. Like, so for just so people know, it started out as, you know, the real culture of cowboys, and like all popular culture, it gets modified into archetypes. And so basically with the Old West, it turned into dime store novels, which were kind of the predecessor to comic books. So they basically made cowboy characters, and they include, there are some black cowboy characters too that were dime store novel characters. And so that's one version of it that comes in. And then on the vaudeville stages, Buffalo Bill Cody, who was an actual Western scout and a fur trapper, and a, you know, he was like a part of the gold rush as well as a teenager. He was like one of the guys going for gold in California. But he did all this stuff, and then he made this theater show that presented the Wild West as with cowboys and Indians, and he was the hero, so it kind of made this white savior thing going on. So there was that, was that bit. And then finally, musically, after they started recording cowboy singers, then you had people like Gene Autry, who was a movie actor as well as a singer, and he was also a guy that followed behind Jimmy Rogers, who and Will Rogers as well, because Jimmy and Will Rogers, they were two big icons of Western culture that just, it evolved from there. So basically you have groups like the Sons of the Pioneers and folks like that who are very sophisticated cowboy groups. So the music shifted along with all these different eras, but there's like three levels of popular culture that translate into the Western culture we know now.
One more I'd love to ask about that just was really ear-catching was Tying Knots in the Devil's Tail. A lot of really amazing language in there, and it's really whimsical and suspenseful and funny. So what's the origin of that one?
Well, Tying Knots in the Devil's Tail, one of the things that makes cowboy music so wonderful is its vernacular language. So it's like the talk of regular people. And these cowboys, they're hard working class people. So there's a roughness to the language that, and a certain way that they use the imagery that is quite remarkable, you know. And Tying Knots in the Devil's Tail was written by a fellow from Prescott, Arizona, a cowboy poet named Gail I. Gardner. And Gail Gardner, he wrote that when he was going to Dartmouth University because his parents wanted him to be a college student, but then he decided to be a rancher. So he wrote about Prescott roping and cowboying in his poem, Tying Knots in the Devil's Tail, which in of itself is kind of an interesting, like, Christian allegory story where basically two cowboys beat up the devil because they're just so drunk that they're just having a great time and beating the devil up, and they tie him to a tree. It's an amazing piece of American literature. And so, of course, in making this album, I wanted to make sure to include some well-worn classics that people would really appreciate. And Tying Knots in the Devil's Tail, as someone who's been to the Prescott Folk Festival in Prescott, Arizona, I felt that was right to tell a little bit about my part of the country, which I say in the intro. I kind of wanted to do a little Burl Ives sort of intro thing where it was kind of like, hello, folks, here's a song from my part of the country.
Well, just to wrap up, and as we preview your show here in town, how have you been touring on this record and promoting it this year? Probably a bit different than some of the other, your past projects.
Well, I think when folks hear me, you know, like I've been doing a couple of recitations from the liner notes here and there, but for the most part, I tend to do an overview show when I do my performances to show off a little bit of where I've come from. Like I'll start out with a song, Cindy Gale, which I learned from Joe Thompson, who was the bassist for the Carolina Chocolate Drops. He was the, you know, his family's music is what really drove us. So I basically do one of his numbers in with playing the harmonica and the rhythm bones, which were another instrument I picked up in North Carolina, very old history, ancient instrument. I'll also play one called the quills, which is a panpipe instrument. And so I featured one of the songs from the album from Black Cowboys, the Henry Thomas number Charmin' Betsy. So I do a version of playing the quills, which is a very old African-American style that especially in East Texas, it lends itself to that early cowboy tradition, because Henry Thomas was really the descendants of those cowboys. And so I do that. Bass Reeves, of course. Steel Pony Blues, which is a song about the Pullman Porters. That's something that I have on there. I'll also feature some of my other original compositions. I played on the Grand Ole Opry, so I always like to feature Hot Chicken, which is a song about a dish in East Nashville, Tennessee. That's a cayenne powder infused fried chicken, which is pretty delicious and deadly, you know.
We are familiar. Yes,
oh,
sir.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know it. And Prince's, by the way, is where I first went. Hattie B's, I like it well, but Prince's is the original, and I was glad that I went there first. And, I mean, it's a beautiful thing to be able to sing that, you know. I'll also probably do my tribute to Dee Ford Bailey. There's a brown-skinned girl down the road somewhere. So that I just played that on the Grand Ole Opry. It's an instrumental piece on the harmonica. I keep a good variety around. I'll probably pick some on the banjo as well, hit some of the breakdowns, and probably do a sing-along or two.
Don Flemons, it's a great treat to talk to you about this project and about music in general. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, Craig. Thank you so much for taking the time with me. And yeah, Black Cowboys, it's just been a real honor to be able to put this album together. I hope people enjoy it, and then I hope people enjoy the show when they come out, and we'll see you there.